Recent unrest in Iran is raising questions about the country's political future and, as a matter of fact, its future relations with the West. We have an opportunity to talk about it. We're joined now by Imran Anwar, founder of Imran Net Services in New York, pioneer of Internet email in Pakistan, and a well-known media expert on India, Pakistan, and Asia. Hi, Imran.
Hi, George. How are you?
I am fine, sir. Bring us up to date, folks that are having some problems figuring out what the dynamics are over there as they read the newspapers. What's happening in Iran?
Basically, George, it's ironic, no pun intended, that while things are appearing to settle down somewhat in the region, including Pakistan and India, and the Kashmir issue, things are heating up within Iran, and not in terms of any escalation or tension with their neighbors, whether it be the Iraqis or anybody else, but internally. And while everybody has always assumed that someday there will be some level of local unrest or local demand for more freedom and curtailing the powers of the clerics, nobody expected it to happen quite as fast as it did, and it seems to have died out, but it seems to have caught a lot of people by surprise.
Well, as I understand it, and see if I have a grasp on this, the current president, Mohammad Khatami, is quite reform-minded, and by Iran standards, quite liberal. And there was a newspaper that was a reformist newspaper that was supporting him, and I guess the more fundamentalist members of government and so on and powers that be, not too happy about this, and they were going to close it down, and that sparked a lot of student activist rioting. Am I correct?
Absolutely, absolutely, and that's something that is pretty interesting. In that, even though Mr. Khatami is assumed to be moderate, the fact is he cannot afford to alienate the right wing, so to speak.
Well, let me ask about that, because that's what I want to put in perspective a bit. Is this gentleman just being swept up in his, kind of what happened to Gorbachev at the end of the Soviet Union? He started to move in one direction, wanted to be a moderate, but kind of got swept, the dynamics of the whole thing kind of swept him away. Is he kind of being swept away with this, or is this the direction he is trying to push the country in as fast as possible?
The way things happened very suddenly, it might even have been some manipulation going on. So, yes, there is that possibility, George. That can always happen.
Yeah, he just got away from him a little bit, in essence.
Exactly.
But now, in the meantime, some old names are starting to surface, because, as I understand it, the former president of Iran, Hashemi Rafsanjani, he is much more a conservative guy, and he wants to, what, his name is being mentioned as a person who might help mediate this a bit?
Yes, absolutely. One of the things that has happened there is, regardless of how you look at it, it seems to be a very closed society, or a very a society dominated by one group of clerics. It actually has its own share of internal politics and bickering within groups that may have the same outlook on life. And also, within that, there is power plays going on, and within that, the religious leadership trying to play an even more active role in political affairs has always been a source of some consternation to the Iranian people, as well as to whoever happens to be in power. So we've seen some of that, and this is also jockeying for position, because people see things settling down, and people see there's a chance to come out looking like the savior when things were settling down on their own anyway.
Well, somebody orchestrated some pro-regime demonstrations. Now, is that Mr. Khatami, or who's behind? I mean, who would you assess would be behind the most recent demonstrations? Because they were counter demonstrations, kind of pro-status quo demonstrations.
I wouldn't say it was he behind those demonstrations. His interest would be more in keeping things in control, to show potential that even to his opponents, for example, that if they try to push some particular agenda too far and too hard, then the opposite party might react even harder. Now, that is something that can be done with these kinds of counter protests, just to send a message. But if things get out of hand and it starts showing up on CNN, etc., as things getting out of hand, that doesn't serve the purpose of whoever is trying to send the message. And so I think that it really did get out of hand a little bit.
Well, here's what confuses us, I think, as laymen in this country. This gentleman, Mr. Khatami, this newspaper was a pro-Khatami newspaper. And the effort to shut it down prompted these protests from students. Now, the write-ups are saying to us that the recent demonstrations were pro-regime demonstrations. I'm having a difficult time understanding what the regime is if it's not Khatami, and if it's him, what's the difference between the demonstrations that are pro-regime and the demonstrations the students were involved in?
It's an interesting question, George. Here's one of the strange ways things get done in Iran right now, is that even though we know that he's a reformist, but Mr. Khatami is the reformist president, correct? We know that.
Yes.
And it's really a council, a supreme council that leads the country, and he's the president of that. Of course, he has a lot of say in what can be done. However, it's really a committee, so to speak, in which he has some, he's a little more equal than others, so to speak. However, interestingly enough, the police force and the basically any kind of armed forces of Iran, they actually report to Ayatollah Khamenei, who is the religious leader. So even though you have a president, his power is actually limited, and that is why there has been a lot of anger about how hard the police came down on the pro-democracy students, and that is one of the things that they are basically protesting.
Well, we should also mention, am I correct, that as is often the case, this threat to close down the paper was more a catalyst than any fundamental component of student unrest here, because what they're really after is a rather significant change in the way government is done in Iran, the way the political structure is set up over there. In other words, they want, if I understand correctly, this group would like to see the separation of religion from government. In other words, the old cliche separation of religion and state, church and state, rather, and that's not something that probably even a fairly liberal leader of Iran, such as Khatami, would be interested in vocalizing right now.
Absolutely, and just to highlight that point for our listeners, the issue is that in the United States you have built a country based upon the separation of church and state, and even then we do, you know, we have In God We Trust on our currency, etc., etc. But at the same time, you know, that's what one of the fundamental things this country is built on in the last 200 years. Countries like Iran or Pakistan or any other country like that, these are countries that are very largely dominated by one religious group. And in the case of Pakistan, for example, it was created for the Muslims of the Indian subcontinent. Iran is really the home of the Shiites of that whole region, if not the whole world, so to speak. So religion is part of the fabric of society, but it's also very much part of the identity and the very reason for existence for these countries. Hence, yes, you will want a sort of disengagement of church and state, or the cleric and government. However, there is no person, no matter how liberal, who can stand up and say that I will lead a government and will make this a secular country, because even the very liberal people there who will go that far will be an extremely small part of the population, maybe 2 or 3%. Mm-hmm. That's how small that liberal element would be. So even if you have 60% people who would like this separation of church and state, this is not to say that they don't want religion to play a part in their lives, etc.
Well, just to make it clear, see, our country was founded on the idea, we've used it, we've said, we've simplified it, made it simplistic, that it's a separation of church and state, which is basically not what the founding fathers were up to. They were talking about having in the Constitution that the government could not establish and support any specific religion. And other than that, it's a little bit misleading. But the point is that in Iran, they in fact have a government religion. It is Islam, and there is probably only a tiny population of anyone living in Iran who would not be Islamic. Am I correct?
Absolutely, and let me throw another point of view on that, George. It's not because the government has an Islamic religion imposed on the country. It's the other way around, actually. It's an Islamic country. So even if all government systems break down, this total anarchy, it would still be an Islamic Muslim country.
Well, yeah,
so even when the Shah of Iran was in power, and he was a very liberal person, and the lifestyle of the Iranians would have put a lot of European countries to shame, was actually still an Islamic country. So religion is very much part of the fabric of society, very much part of the national psyche. But how far people want bearded cleric fundamentalists telling them what they can read, what they can watch, what they can think is where the issue comes in. So it's less about the government having a particular religion imposed on the people. I get your point about the United States, but in the case of Iran, the issue is that the clerics are basically saying, we decide what you can watch, we decide what you can read, we decide what is right and wrong, and we decide whether you can even protest or have an opinion on something, which is something which is contrary to human nature, regardless of your being in a Muslim country, a secular country, or even living in a colony on the planet Mars someday.
Absolutely. In other words, that was the problem with communism, which were, you know, that was a secular society. But here's the point I was trying to make, that the real concern the founding fathers had was not so much that we might have "In God We Trust" on the coin, but that the government, as was the case in Europe, in England with the Church of England and many European countries under Catholicism in those days, the government establishes and supports one religion, basically to the exclusion of all others, and then does use it in a dictatorial way. Well, that is certainly the case in Iran. However else you might structure it at the moment, that's how it's set up, and these protesters are trying to trigger some movement to protest against a fundamentalist government dictatorship, basically, if I'm understanding it correctly.
Absolutely, George. Look at it from the perspective of the Iranian history from before the fall of the Shah of Iran. The country of Iran, even though it was still the same Shiite population, the same Islamic government, the Islamic nation, so to speak, was home to a very large number of Iranian Jews who were living there safely, prospering, doing very well in business. And now we see that those same Iranian Jews actually tend to settle a lot in the California area, who found that they were being persecuted. So nothing changed. The religion has not changed in 1400 years, and people's psyches have not changed in, those 1,000 years. What has changed has been that the hardliners are now running policy, and the hardliners are now dictating what a mob mentality can be started, created to go after anybody, much like it happened in Germany. So that is what really leads to religion getting the bad rap, unfortunately, but it really is the people, so-called managers of that religion, so-called spiritual leaders who try to be using that spirituality-based gift that they have from the people to use that for their own political and power gain ends, and that is the price we all pay for.
Yeah, and I doubt that anyone in Iran, because liberal over there would be liberal by standards of Iran, not liberal by standards of the West or standards certainly of the United States, but someone over there pushing, one of these students pushing for this separation, certainly are not calling for any decline in the level of control over religion that Islam has in Iran. I'm sure of that. There are some other factions over there. There are Armenian Iranis who would be Christian. There are Kurds who are not well thought of for whatever reasons in all over that region of the East, and you said Irani Jews. I'm sure they're not highly regarded as a religious force in Iran. So there's not much likelihood that Islam is going to be threatened. But they want, the truth is, if I understand it correctly, what they're really pushing for is more liberal political system.
Absolutely, and that obviously the benefits and ramifications of a liberalization of the political body and the political structure is that then people can go about the daily business of being people, not parts of a certain category or a caste or a religion or a group that has to be targeted, vindicated, or actually even persecuted. And we see that in every country in the world. You will always have a core group of evil. It can be a very well-placed religious evil, so it can be somebody who's very spiritual, but the core is still evil because they are hate mongers more than anything else. But you can have that here with the church of whatever that is behind some of these recent attacks that have taken place on minorities and foreigners that we saw in the United States. So you will always have that evil religious leader, which is really a misnomer. I think it's really somebody using the name of religion to for their own evil purposes. And that will always happen in every country in the world. But fortunately, in the United States, the government is for the most part, you know, quite well controlled by a very powerful, strong constitution that has been in effect and has always been in effect in this country. And that is something that is lacking in other countries. And part of it is because the countries were not founded with that same philosophy in mind. So it will be, it is hard to impose. Even though the American model works very well for the United States, it is, and it's a great system. However, it is hard for it to be picked up and imposed and expect to have the same results. But yes, there are great things that people learn from the American system, and that is what a lot of the democratic movements around the world are based upon. The same concepts that the United States has in its daily existence as an American enjoys in his or her daily life. Those are the things that these democracy supporters and pro-democracy leaders, whether they be in China, whether they be in Pakistan or Iran, or in Latin America, that's where the inspiration and the lesson is coming from. But this having the same exact structure might not solve their problems. So that's one of the things our listeners need to be aware of, that just because systems can be different does not mean that the fundamental rights and the fundamental way of living and the fundamental outlook on life cannot and should not be the same.
Yeah, and of course students tend to get in an uproar, and often with cause, but they don't always solve the problem even if they win. I mean, they were the basic catalyst for the overthrow of the Shah, and things didn't go from bad to better. They probably went from bad to bad, and so you don't know where. History tells us that revolutions don't always wind up with benevolent leadership, but, even if they're victorious. But let me ask about this. Let us say that this this unrest continues to build, and that we do have some something that is disruptive to the government. Maybe even starts to build toward you know, the kind of thing that we saw at the end of the Shah's regime. First of all, what's the likelihood of that? And second of all, what are the implications for the West and for the region? And let's be honest, we're worried about oil prices and everything else. We have they're a huge oil producer. We have a lot of we have a big vested interest in that region.
So basically, George, those are good questions. Personally, I think that the students are yes, they're emotional and they're excited, but they're also smart enough to know that they cannot bring about a revolution. They don't have that groundswell of support that came from the Shah's regime's really mistreatment of the people. It was mm-hmm. It was really barbaric, and so even though we see a lot of loss of liberties and a lot of imposition of opinions and beliefs from the government down everybody's throat, it is not half as bad as what it became under the Shah of Iran towards the end. So the students are smart enough to know that they have a leverage point, but they know they don't have the momentum to bring anything down or to create overnight revolutions. So they will go with this negotiate and protest peacefully strategy, I believe. That is my take on this. Now, as far as the reformists, that will suit them just fine, because this will give them just enough ammunition to at least make sure that their voices are heard in the corridors of power. The fear would be that any kind of liberalization, any kind of softening might be seen as a sellout by the hardliners. And like we discussed, that some of the protests may have been supported or actually backed or even set up by the hardline leadership. The risk there is that they might want to do the same thing, having seen how well it worked in China, that, yeah, 10 years later, everybody's talking about the anniversary, but big deal, the system is still the same, and the same people are still in power. So, yes, you can do, a major disastrous action against the student uprising. The whole world will condemn you, but so what else is new? And, you know, in a few months, people will forget. And that is the bigger risk that I don't see as a major probability right now, but that is still a serious threat I would consider.
And real quick, is this an opportunity for the U.S., or should we just stay out of it?
The U.S. should stay out of this political issue, but in the meantime, through some economic benefits or some other kind of softening, show the current reformist-minded people that they do have support externally, even if it's not hand-in-hand, we stand by you kind of support, because that might actually backfire.
Well, Imran, thank you as always. Have a great day, and you and I will talk very soon, of course.
Thank you, sir.
Imran Anwar, founder of Imran Net Services in New York, pioneer of internet email in Pakistan, and a well-known media expert on India, Pakistan, and Asia.